Hello and welcome to a post-game edition of the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber of the Center Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. Audrey, we have taken over the coaches' booths, as some can tell. I am in the Maryland coaches' booth, and you are in Penn State's from today.
I'm sitting right here where Mike Yurcich could sat or stood when he said, you know what, this is it, Bo Prabula package, here
I knew this is where you're going to start. I knew this was it.
To memorialize this night, this particular package that we've been hearing about since April. So sorry if you're watching on YouTube and it looks like we're at a doctor's office. We're not, but we are here to examine Penn State's 51-15 win against Maryland. John, this is quite the outcome for the Nittany Lions.
Yeah, it feels like this was really important. The timing, the way it happened, like all of it like mattered. Maybe I'm looking a little too much into it, but it felt like all of this coming together right now when it did matters more than it could have at another time, right? Like,
oh, absolutely. That's what my story is about. Yes.
Yeah, same here. It feels like, I don't want to take too much from it, and people will say I'm overreacting, and that's fine. It feels like Penn State has a chance next week. And yes, that did not feel true, 7 hours ago? Yes. This offense is different. This is the offense that we thought we were going to see large majority of the season. And I mean, I think we got to start there. This is, I mean, good God, Drew Aller was incredible. Like this was, you know what I mean? Everything was, it didn't feel like he missed at all today. I think there was one pass where he had Cephas along the sideline, maybe overthrew him a little bit. Looked like it might've been going to Theo, like it was an in-between throw, but he was incredible pretty much the entire game.
Yeah, Aller finished 25 of 34, 240 yards, 4 touchdowns. We talked about it last week, John, but we're starting to see him use his legs a little bit too. Had 39 yards on the ground, 21 of them came on one play. It was like a 3rd and 4, but he did a really nice job. He looked different. He looked comfortable. He looked like the 5-star prospect that people have been waiting to see. And you know, John, while in the first quarter, while Drew Aller's on a heater and the offense is rolling, I said, you know, maybe that interception last week, maybe that did unlock some things. And Aller was asked about it after the game. And while he didn't agree with that premise last week, that he needs to throw a pick to get it out of the way, this is what he said when asked what changed for him this week. He said, I think it really set in that last drive versus Indiana where I went out there and was really confident in myself. I went out there and took a couple deep breaths and kind of took in the moment instead of kind of overanalyzing things in the moment. I was able to find that inner self-confidence that I've always had and just go out there and perform. I think that's what triggered it for me. So again, this did not look like a Drew Aller that was afraid. This looked like a Drew Aller that trusted his receiving core. And boy, did they ever step up, John. You and I said on our midweek show that this was now or never for the receiving core. And today, this team, this offense responded to the challenge.
Can I take a victory lap on something that I said was going to happen every other week, but this one? Like Dante Cephas was great, right? This was the most important for him to be this good.
I think, John, I think I just heard a train whistle for the Dante Cephas hype train. I think it's the station.
We're back. The conductor is back. I am here to carry everyone throughout our journey today. But no, he was, this is the stuff that gets me, and it's tough because, you know, from game to game, you want to base it all off the production, right? You want to base it all off what he did and didn't do from a tangible standpoint. This, I don't think, looked all that differently to me on a route-to-route basis. What happened was the trust that I think you and I have talked about a lot that did not seem like it existed. That was there. And the confidence, Cephas' confidence in himself, he said after the game that he was the most confident that he's ever been, right, at Penn State. I think this is the combination of those two things, the trust and the confidence kind of manifesting itself in production, whereas the route running, like, didn't necessarily feel like it looked noticeably better. Like, I think he's been great from that standpoint all year. He's had drop issues this season, but that was not an issue today. That's another, you know, noticeable difference. But, yeah, for the most part, this was kind of – this is what I felt like it would look like when he did put it together, right? That those last two pieces would click, and him and Aller were on the same page throughout the game. Not just him and Aller, by the way, the timing routes that have been a problem this season, they were on the money on those pretty much the entire game.
And I think, too, the thing with Cephas is, you know, he gets that first touchdown, right? And he said, yes, that was a relief, that this has been on his mind. When's he going to get a touchdown, right? Like, I thought Cephas was very honest after the game. I mean, we talked to him midweek last week after practice, and he, you know, he tried to stay upbeat and those kinds of things. But he, I think, was a little more forthcoming after the game. And he's like, yeah, like, this was hard. You know, he was calling home to Pittsburgh, talking to his high school coaches, basically being like, you know, please give me something to stay encouraged and upbeat. And talking to Keandre Lambert-Smith after the game, he said, you know, he said, it's really a credit to him that I didn't really know that Cephas was going through that, that he didn't let it show. Right. So yes, it was a relief for Dante Cephas. It was also a relief for this offense. It was a relief for James Franklin, who said basically like, yeah, this is what you wanted, right? You wanted a win, of course. You also wanted a win in which your receiving core came along, right? Like he said, James said, this was a win-win. And I feel like that's the thing. 'Cause you're right, John. I leave here tonight saying that they now might have a chance against Michigan next week. And I think we do, like, you got to pump the brakes. I think Maryland's corners were no match. Like, I do think we have to kind of factor this in. Like, this is a reeling Maryland team. But again, they do get up for this game. This was a great crowd, great day, beautiful day in College Park. A lot of Penn State fans in the crowd, which kind of accounted for why it looked so full. But yeah, to me, this was the offense that we thought we were going to see against West Virginia. And we did see the explosive element against West Virginia with the big Keandre Lambert-Smith touchdown. But also the tight ends, like, they were such a huge factor in this today as well. And James Franklin said, hey, yeah, we've got more than one guy now that people need to think about and prepare for. And that's huge. Like, to me, we don't know if this is going to lead to anything bigger for this offense. But it feels like tonight, at least they put their best foot forward. And that is really, really noticeable with this particular group.
Yeah, you mentioned James and what he said afterward. And I think on some level, he was just kind of, I don't know, trying to say that this is, you know, it was essentially putting this at the foot of the early down success, right? And that's why it all came together, and that the cover zero was the reason the deep shots were connecting. On some level, that's true with, you know, Maryland bringing so much pressure and not leaving safety help over the top. Those deep shots are going to be there. It's not just that they were there, though. It's that they were connecting on them pretty much every time they were there, right? Like, they were, I want to say there were two that I can remember. One where Keandre Lambert-Smith lost the ball, and one where I think Aller barely out threw Lambert-Smith. Maybe.
Yeah, and then there was one with Warren that he had it in the end zone and bobbled it. But
yep.
Yeah.
But that was more of, you know, that wasn't like a timing or a drop, right? Like, that's more attributable to that. This was the offense kind of putting it together on all fronts. I understand why James is saying that, right? Like, he doesn't want it to seem like anything actually changed or that, you know, things are.
Listen,
really,
John, he is not going to apologize for winning.
Yeah.
He wants us to be, I guess, a little bit nicer in the post game press conferences after wins. Although I felt like we were very measured tonight. Like, this is one of those games where there is not much for us
51-15
to complain about, right? But he wanted to enjoy this for at least 15 minutes.
That's why I asked him what was different about the passing game. And I was the one who gave the short answer about, like, the early down success, essentially saying that he already said that. And that's fine. You know what I mean? Agree to disagree on that one. He is the head coach. I am an outside observer here. But I do think that there was more to it. There is Cephas's contributions. There's the timing. There's the confidence. There's the fact that Aller – listen, I don't want to give more oxygen to this theory that – Drew Aller needed to throw an interception because
I thought it was pretty dumb. I'm going to admit, I thought it was a really dumb
theory. I don't think it holds weight. So I think what holds weight, and this is the premise behind needing to throw the interception. I do think Drew Aller needed to know that it was okay to just try some stuff, right? To try and trust his arm and trust his arm talent. I think that's more important than actually throwing an interception.
Yeah.
Did the interception seemingly make him more willing to trust his arm and to take some shots on some throws that maybe he hadn't this year? It seems like that might be the case, right? Like, it seems like trying one of those tight window throws kind of gave him, like, I don't know, it gave him confidence, and it ended in an interception. You don't want to throw an interception. You never want to throw an interception. It is not good to ever throw an interception. But, like, the idea that, like, he is – unlocked now, that he is playing more freely, there's credence to that, right? I think that's very real. And
I mean, he said it. The fact that he said that, I was like, okay, because even after the game last Saturday, he was like, yeah, I really wasn't buying all that talk, you know. But his teammates, I mean, Lambert Smith even said it last week. He was like, yeah, like, I think Drew needed to throw that pick.
Yes.
So whatever has happened in the past week, it seems like Drew Aller has found himself. Seems like this offense has found itself. I thought Catron Allen had some really nice runs today. He got the start. We're still not seeing from Nick Singleton what I thought we'd see from Nick Singleton. In terms of the running back version of Nick Singleton. So I think we're starting to see this offense. And again, John, we don't know if it's going to lead to anything. But then we just said all of these nice things about the offense and about Drew Aller and trusting his arm. And then it happened. This huge, monumental, pivotal moment for these 2023 Nittany Lions. Right here, somewhere in these seats, Bo Kubula goes out there late in the first quarter. And at first, it was Kubula came in and Aller just came Kubula. Off.
Yep.
And then we got the actual Bo Kubula package. Because at first, like when that happened, I was sitting there and I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. They said both quarterbacks. Like that was the plan. That was the package. So then we did get that on the next play.
Mike must have heard you from a few boxes over.
He probably did, because I do have a bit of a booming voice.
That's right.
The thing was, as soon as they came on, John, we said last week, midweek, I said the funniest thing would be if they debuted it against Michigan and it went for a touchdown. Well, we got like an even funnier option because they debuted it here in Maryland. It goes for a touchdown, except Aller throws the pass. Prabula's wide open, but Aller throws it to Theo Johnson instead. And I got to admit, John, like to me, this is one of those great moments where we're all there in the press box and we all just laughed.
Yes. I tweeted this, that the best part about it was the reaction in the press box. Everyone was like, Oh, like it was excitement and like funny. And I don't know, everyone was having a good time.
We've been waiting for this and just, you know, like they've obviously put a lot of thought into it. Now I do think, right. Like how many more wrinkles do they have off of this? Cause I used my question to ask James Franklin about the Bo Kubula package. And why debut it now? Like, why not save it for another week with Michigan? And essentially, without saying the word Michigan, he said, well, this gives our future opponents one more thing to prepare for. So maybe they're not sending so many mixed signals toward the Wolverines after all, John.
I made sure to include in my takeaways tonight, which, by the way, we haven't said this yet. You can find what I've written about this game at SenderDaily.com and what Audrey's written at The Athletic. Also,
and rate, review, subscribe.
Yes, rate, review, subscribe. Hit the thumbs up button down below us. If you're watching on YouTube, leave those ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. But it's funny. I made sure to put in my takeaways that Michigan's defense is so good, it's almost like they know what the play is before it's coming, which, you know, is not an accident to write something like that. So my whole thing with this was don't take your best player off the field, right? Don't take Drew Aller off the field, which is why I don't necessarily like the first play as much. But the second play, so there's levels to unpack here. Listen, I've gotten on Mike Yurcich a lot lately, but the actual design of this play really is brilliant, right? Because too often coordinators say they're going to do something like this. They put the starting quarterback at receiver and essentially have them fake block, have them do nothing. They're not a part of the play. This play started out, I believe it was with Aller at quarterback, right, and Kubula next to him, and then they motioned, right? I'm trying to remember how this went.
I need to go back and look at it again.
I believe they motioned and Kubula swung out wide. Either way, one of the two quarterbacks started with the ball. Aller ended with it with Kubula swinging out wide, giving Aller the ball to essentially throw that pass back to Kubula. I believe it was Kubula handed it to Aller. Again, this has been a very long day. It's going to be longer when you and I both drive home tonight. But the pass itself, it was there to Kubula, but Drew didn't look over there. Instead, he finds Theo Johnson while falling down in the middle of the field, just kind of flips it forward to Theo, who catches it for the touchdown. But the play design itself, to have both guys out there and have them involved, is so crucial. And it's a brilliant play design. Yurcich deserves a lot of credit for that. I don't think most coordinators or most play designers put enough thought when they when they do these things, mm-hmm. right? Like, I think too often it's just like, oh, put the starting quarterback at receiver and let him go. This is involving both. And that's how you create real advantages, because otherwise you're playing 10 on 11, essentially. This yes. allows you to play full 11 on 11 with two guys who can throw the ball. Two guys who can run, by the way, because Drew, as he showed tonight, can run the ball. And I think Yurcich did a brilliant job with the play design, with the timing, the play call. And like you said, and like James said, it puts it on film for Michigan to think about.
I do think, John, whenever we hear from Mike Yurcich, maybe it's at a bowl game, I need to know, how many Red Bulls did he consume? How many nights of sleep did he miss working on this Bo Pribula package? Because I'm sure it was a lot for this staff. But you're right. I mean, kudos to them for using it. I said all along that they would use it at some point this season. There were some skeptics out there, one of them, John Sauber, who did not think we would see it. So let the record show, we did see the Bo Pribula package. And you know what the funny thing was? So after the game, we're doing interviews, and the setup here at Maryland is really terrible in terms of, like, the band is playing on the field while we're talking to Dante.
Listen, Audrey, saying it's terrible was far too kind.
I'm trying to be nice. So that way they don't turn the lights out on me.
That's true.
But so the band is playing, but I had a flashback during interviews. I remembered interviewing Tommy Stevens over against that, like, fieldhouse wall several years ago when we were talking about the Lion package. And so what a full circle moment in Penn State backup quarterback history. This is also the site I remembered this pregame. This is the site of where Micah Parsons had tweeted yes. from the locker room when he got ejected here on that Friday night game. So really some historic, some monumental moments in this series that the Big Ten has tried to force down our throats.
Well, good news, it's now over.
In this rivalry that never materialized, although there were some chippy instances tonight. You know, I just think it was nice to see the Bo Pribula package, even though James Franklin said the execution wasn't fully there, right? And then later on, they had down here at the other side of the field, they put Bo Pribula in, got tripped himself up, it looked like, yes. or the turf monster got
turf
him.
Monster got him, yeah.
Lost 2 yards. So they're going to continue. Like, to me, I feel like what we learned tonight is, one, this package does exist. It's real. They haven't been lying to us for months. So that's that was nice. And two, they're going to continue to use Bo Pribula, I would think, around the goal line, whether that is out of his specific package or if that's taking Aller out, letting him operate. I do think we're going to see that. But, John, we can't let the other trick play go, because I yeah. think actually we learned a third thing tonight. We learned that Mike Yurcich has a thing for Keandre Lambert-Smith, or really just receivers in general,
yes.
throwing passes, because we saw it with Jahan Dotson. We saw it before with Lambert-Smith.
Well, Keandre still, he still fancies himself QB1. He said it himself. He was joking, mm-hmm. of course, after the game.
But he did. But I mean, in high school, he did. So, yes. I mean, I get it. He's got an arm. I get that. However,
to go back on the Pribula play real quick, I did find my notes. Pribula and Aller both went in motion. Pribula took the snap from the gun, flipped it back to Aller, swung out wide. Aller had Pribula open over there. But just for clarity's sake, that is how the play unfolded. I'm sure those of you who are listening have seen it or watched it 45 times at this point.
We have
rightfully
not.
So. It was a lot of fun to watch unfold. I think everyone in the press box enjoyed it, like I said. But the wide receiver pass thing, like, my first thought when it happened was, oh, man, Lambert-Smith had Dante Cephas running down the sideline. Like
and, I mean, actually Warren worked. Was open, he had him too. Open. Like, that's
yeah.
the thing. Like, the design
yeah,
of
but
it,
you can't.
You
can't
got what throw, you wanted, but.
You can't throw late across the middle. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Roll yeah. into your left like that. It's, like, in this game, it's like, no, whatever, it doesn't matter. But this really should not be a feature of the – not even that it's a feature. It shouldn't be something that's consistently happening in the offense.
This could become a this. Staple.
Yeah, like, if you're going to run that play, just stick Pribula out there instead of Lambert-Smith, because I don't think defense is enough. Now, it did happen tonight, to their credit, and that's partially because Maryland was being hyper-aggressive defensively. But most defenses aren't biting because they can see that the ball is backwards from Aller to Lambert-Smith, so they know that something's up, right, because that design is very intentional. It's kind of – I don't want to call it easy to see, but it is noticeable. Right. And something yeah. that's a little easier to spot than most screens. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know why this keeps
happening.
Would
you run this again, John?
No. I would run it with Pribula, but like at this point it's on tape a lot.
You know what this means? First play from scrimmage against Michigan. Yurcich is gonna do it again.
I would be stunned if they don't run it against Michigan, just because they're running it so much lately, and I don't understand why. They tried to run it a bunch earlier in the year, too, by the way, if you remember. They tried to run it, I think, against Iowa and potentially West Virginia, although I might be misremembering.
I'm
going to
be honest. I've blocked out a lot of the early this year offense.
Like everyone has.
Just because I, you know, my brain can only take so many things, and that's usually not many things.
Right.
But I do think, I mean, Lambert Smith was targeted a dozen times tonight. Like, that was, to me, one of those sneaky numbers.
The Ohio State game, you kind of didn't expect that number to be that high.
And I will say, too, John, again, I mentioned earlier the tight ends. Huge fourth down conversion. Tyler Warren had one. So did Khalil Dinkins. Also had another, which Dinkins is a fourth down conversion magnet. Three receptions this year have come on fourth downs. So I don't know what it is, but... And with the Dinkins play, they had gone to the T formation. And then, again, this is another variation on the T. So we saw that, which I don't know, John, still brings me back to where the hell was the T formation against Ohio State? I don't know, but it's back now. It's here to stay. I guess they'll probably point to first and second down. Again, like, we also saw fourth downs, right? Like, they were willing. If you're close, you're going to go for it. And that was what James Franklin has said time and time again. He feels like that is the identity of this offense, right? They're going to kind of grind you out. And then also fourth and manageable, they're going to go for it. Complementary football is such a big piece of that, which really was how this game started. I tweeted that Penn State couldn't have asked for a better start, right? Defense comes out, gets a fourth down stop. Offense gets great field position, turns it into a touchdown. Like, to me, that is like, yes, that right there, that is your recipe for success. Rely on that defense because they are that good. But again, where was this identity against Ohio State when you had the fourth down? You didn't go, like, to me, that's where that game was such an anomaly. And that's what makes me wonder, do they overthink it next week again against Michigan? I don't know. Maybe they're onto something here. Like, I did find Theo Johnson had a quote that I thought was really interesting. And he said after the game, he basically was like, yeah, when you win a game this way, when you're that dominant, he's like, yeah, that gives you more confidence your whole week of preparation. Like, when you go out and do what they just did to this Maryland team, there's some positives that you can take away from that. He was also asked, like, do you feel like last week needed to happen, right? That they essentially just about hit rock bottom, right, against Indiana.
They almost let one turn into two again.
Yeah, like, the snowball theory was on high alert. And Theo Johnson said, you know, no, like, they didn't feel like last week needed to happen, but they talked so much this week about how would they respond. I thought, John, from the get-go, this team was locked in. I mean, looking down at the field on that fourth down stop for the defense, Manny Diaz was jacked up.
Isn't he?
That's true. That's fair. Chop Robinson was very animated all game on the sideline. Chop, of course, didn't play, but did make the trip. Penn State got a waiver, so he was able to be here and not count against the travel roster. We did see him warm up, which is the most we've seen him do. I mean, that's the first we've seen him on the field since Ohio State.
And James talked about the process that he's going through. Clearly,
very much made it sound like concussion protocol, because James even said the word protocol.
Yeah, I think clearly intimating that he's in concussion protocol. But no, this was like energetic. This was a different team. You know, and I was looking over here at some of the numbers from this game. Like, they punted twice. Like, that's incredible. This is an offense that has been, I don't know, inept feels mean, right? Like, inept feels too far, but kind of inept, right, for long stretches of this season.
James has had his 15 minutes. You're going to be mean now, John. See, yeah, this is how you are.
Listen, he said
this
he
is why he wanted
minutes.
None of your question tonight.
Gave him the 15 minutes. Listen, maybe he'll enjoy the hoodie that I have on tonight and want to know where I got this one too. But no, I think, like, they put it all together in a way that we just haven't seen, and they have reason to act the way they did, right? To be that happy, to be that motivated, and to have that much energy about them. And they need to carry it into this week, because, you know, as much fun as I'm sure Penn State fans had watching this, you know, like, seeing kind of like, this is what it was supposed to look like. None of it matters if they don't do it next week, right? Like, they have to come out and put together. It doesn't have to look like this, for what it's worth. Like I said, this is a Michigan defense so good.
And it won't look like this. Yeah,
it's not going to, but that's okay. but you have to see pieces of this, right? You have to see a deep shot
stick
connect.
To your identity.
Yes, you have to see them going for it on fourth down. Mm-hmm. You have to see Ka'Tron Allen pushing the pile, getting an extra 6, 7, 8 yards.
Yeah, he did a tremendous job with that tonight too. That was something else that really stood out to me.
Yeah, and you have to see the tight ends get involved and make those kind of crucial catches. You have to
see the Bob Beal package.
Yes, you have to do the things that are going to form your identity, that have formed your identity throughout this year, and it's going to be so important for them to do those things next week. I just think, again, they don't have to do it in long stretches. They don't even have to do it, or they don't have to do it for the whole game. They don't even have to do it for long stretches, but it's just got to show up. Like, it's got to look on some level like this. It cannot look like it did against Ohio State. But, you know, we mentioned Ka'Tron. Audrey, I think it's pretty clear at this point that Fat Man's their best running back. I don't know.
No, I'm with you. I was converted to the other side on this argument last week. It took a while. It took a lot of convincing.
It's even more glaring now, though.
I'm a stubborn person. And, I am fully convinced. I'm not sure how or why with Nick Singleton. It's just not coming together right now.
There's something not clicking. He just doesn't look the same as last year.
But then he had the kickoff return late, right? Right. Full disclosure, so I was in the restroom, so I heard it on the speaker. And here we go. No,
it was one of those. I saw the lane, and I audibly said, he's got space. And then he took the cut and went up the far sideline away from us and made it pretty far downfield. But, it's clear he's still great in open space. He's just not finding that space. Where last year, maybe once or twice a game, he would find that space and he would go and it'd be a touchdown, right? You'd see that massive play, but it's just not happening this year. And it's not too late or anything. He's still a very talented player, still going to be a massive part of the program next year. But right now, Ka'Tron's got to get, 60 to 65%. It's got to be 75, 80% of these carries, especially against Michigan. Maybe you try and get Singleton on some runs to the outside. You try and get him in space on some screens and stuff. Although Ka'Tron, again, is a better receiver than Singleton is right now. I think it's clear as day right now that they've got their number one running back. They've got two very talented running backs, but they've got their number one running back in Ka'Tron Allen.
And we saw the rotation again to start it out. Ka'Tron Allen, first two series, then Singleton came in. I'm with you. I do wonder if that changes at some point, right? If you kind of rely on Ka'Tron more, because I get it. I am fully bought in now that they should, right? To me, that's what they need to do. But John, you had mentioned it, Nick Singleton, future part of the program. And it's a fleeting thought. I can't let it pass. Do you think, again, this is just gut reaction, we're not reporting anything, do you think both of these guys are here next year?
You know, I said that, and it was one of those things where I was someone could be well, you don't know that they're both going to be here. And
you're Audrey's going to ask me about that.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Well, I'm saying even a listener could poke a hole in that and listen, there's validity to that. I genuinely don't know. Like you said, we're not reporting anything. Mm. I'll say that it is difficult to keep two running backs happy. We see that all the time. Would I be surprised if one of them's gone? No. I also wouldn't be surprised if both are back, right? I think... And this gets lost on a lot of guys. It really is better for everyone if there's a two back backfield that
they
can
trust.
Limit the wear
and tear. We've already seen the league doesn't value them.
You see it all the time. It's I don't even think it's that the league doesn't value them. It's the league just squeezes every bit of juice they can out of a running back before the end of his rookie contract. And by then it's there are plenty of really good running backs, so you don't necessarily have to re-sign that guy. I would be trying to add some longevity to my career, You're a Packers fan. You see it. Aaron Jones has had a longer career than a lot of guys because he hasn't been a feature guy pretty much his whole career.
Because they bubble wrap him.
So yeah, right.
Way more than my liking, but I get it.
Yes, that's correct.
He's special enough. You got to keep him fresh. Yeah. And I think that is, to me, that's the thing with these running backs is you are in such a good spot.
Let's take a quick break from the podcast to tell you about our friends at Voodoo Brewery. And I mean our friends, both Wes and Josh, great people, friends at this point, both fantastic, have great alcohol, have great food. Voodoo at 201 Elmwood Street is the place to be, Audrey.
I could use some alcohol right about now, John. It's been a long day here in college.
Given the timing of when this ad will show up in the pod, people might find out about why later.
That's true. Yeah, we could always use a drink, right? Could always use a good drink at Voodoo Brewing Company. It's been a day, John. I typically have Voodoo beers in my fridge for when I go home after home games. But obviously on the road, it's a little bit of a different story here. But I love the atmosphere there. I love the vibes. I don't like that I never win at bingo, but I will keep trying because one of these days, maybe we will win.
We won't. But if you want to play bingo, you can do that at 6 p.m. on Thursdays at Voodoo. You can play pub trivia at 6 p.m. on Tuesdays. Like we said, we've said time and time again, it is just a fantastic place to spend time with friends, hang out with family.
Get you a mimosa.
Get you a mimosa, some Voodoo Love Child mixed with orange juice. One of my favorites, has been for a long time. I've been going there since I moved back to State College. I used to cover Indiana. I lived out in Bloomington and moved back right around when Voodoo was opening, actually, and have been going ever since, essentially. It's a great place. With cold weather coming, their fire pits will be available. And who doesn't love sitting around a fire pit and having a nice cold beer? And you can do that by going to
Voodoo Brewery. Sounds really good right now.
I know. I really could use one. It's a shame I won't get home till 2 a.m. But if you would like to do that, Voodoo is the place to do it. That's Voodoo Brewing Company at 201 Elmwood Street in State College.
And we even saw, John, like with the offensive line today, right? Like, you know, JB Nelson was back, and then we saw Venga go to right guard for a good bit. Then we did see in the second half, Drew Shelton was in at tackle because Caden Wallace did start. So that kind of held true that they thought he would start and play, and he did. So James Franklin said on his radio show on Thursday that the rest of this season, which I don't think we count Michigan week into that, that's a special category, but the rest of this season is about developing that depth up front. Because as you and I talked about last week, you got to start peeking ahead to 2024 in some of these games, and you're going to have opportunities to do it against Rutgers and Michigan State especially. But I do kind of wonder just – what you do long-term with this offensive line, because you've got two very special running backs. You've got a special quarterback who showed that tonight. But John, are we ready to talk about this defense? Did we hit on everything for the off? Did I miss anything?
I think we did. I think we hit on pretty much everything you could possibly hit on with this offense. I even gave Mike Yurcich credit. You know,
If he's not here to listen to it, what does it matter, John?
That's right. But no, the defense, saw some people complaining online about the defense.
Listen, were they? About what?
Saying that they give up too much yardage or what have you, and things that I can't get with, essentially, right? Like, they gave up two touchdowns. One of them was after Liam Clifford was called for a roughing the punter penalty that James seemed to disagree with. I'm not sure. I didn't see a replay of it.
That sequence was weird. So, I mean, that was...
They thought it was blocked. But they... it seems like Penn State thought the punt was blocked. The refs didn't see it that way, called roughing the punter. Maryland ends up scoring a touchdown on that drive that should have ended in, you know what I mean, Maryland's territory.
Well, and then Johnny Dixon had the penalty too around the goal line. And that, to me, like, that was those two penalties. You talk about teachable moments. You talk about James and his Sunday PowerPoints. They should be on the PowerPoint, right? Well, whether you agree with it or not, that was a huge momentum swing early in the game. Maryland goes down and scores, makes it 14-7. And to me, that was one of those where you're like, but Penn State essentially helped.
I don't know that I ever had that. Seven. Yeah, I never had that feeling that there was like 14-7. Like, honestly, even when it was like, I want to say it was 31-15, it was like, oh, it's two possessions with 13 minutes left. I was like, this thing's over.
You know what?
But yeah, early on, I thought it was over. It felt like, honestly, Penn State completely controlled this. But real quick, just to go to the second touchdown drive, the same thing essentially happened, different variation of it. Denied Dennis Sutton hits Talia Tungavailoa late, like barely hit him. But it is roughing the passer. Like, I know people can complain about that, and I understand that. Mm-hmm. It is roughing the passer. And also on that drive, Johnny Dixon, this happened before the roughing the passer. Johnny Dixon's called for a hold near midfield. Or for defensive pass interference. This is the one that I was like, it's not really a catchable ball. I understand if you're making the argument that, well, it's not catchable because Dixon interfered. I don't agree with that. I understand if you want to make that argument. I don't agree with that. I don't think that one should have been called. I think it should not have been DPI and the drive should have been over there. But the denying down a sudden one, it's like, yes, that's a penalty. Like, I understand people may not be happy with the whatever. Like, it is a penalty by the rules. Like, the you have to play the sport by what the rules currently are, and you can't do that.
Yeah, no. To me, the penalty stuff is – and we've seen a lot of that, it feels like, from this team this year.
Yeah.
It seems like just about every week when James Franklin comes in, he laments that, you know, the penalty battle, the explosive play battle, all the key statistics, and then kind of gets on us for not being positive enough after a win. And then it's like, hey, yeah, the penalty battle again. Maybe it bites you at some point this year. Maybe it doesn't. But I do think there were some key moments with those penalties tonight again. But John, we saw Jameel Lyons burned his red shirt that appeared in his fifth game. And so that's another one because they I wanted to ask, did you catch this? So Adisa Isaac, again, someone who is making himself a lot of money. Yes. Did you see him put the fours up? I did not notice that.
Yeah,
how did he do it? Can you show it for me, John?
He just put four on both hands up, four fingers up on both, as presumably for Chop Robinson.
He said so afterward. Yes, yeah, okay, I asked him afterward. Yeah, I said I didn't see what you did, but apparently you did something with four.
Yeah. Pretty inconspicuous. I think someone might have showed me a replay. I don't want to take credit for seeing this. Might have been Daniel Gallen that showed me the replay of Lions 247, but Maryland alum Daniel Gallen. But no, this was like you mentioned, he's making himself some money. I mean, this is the best pass rush in the country, right? This is two first round picks probably in Chop Robinson and Adisa Isaac. I was not on board with that earlier this year with Adisa, but he's producing and he's doing it with skills and ability that translates to the next level, which is obviously the important part for being an early round pick. But he's like one of many, right? Like they don't have Chop today and they're fine. Like, because they have denied Dennis Sutton and Adisa and like Jameel Lyons, he wasn't, you know, amazing today or anything, but you know, we talk about like what this looks like
for a true freshman. Yeah.
We talk about what this looks like next year. Is there any step back with denied Dennis Sutton and Jameel Lyons compared to having Adisa and Chop now? Like those two guys, both could be first round picks too.
Those are massive shoes to fill. I mean, I think Denai is going to be really, really good. But again, you have Zariah Fisher. You have Zariah Fisher as well. You have Amin Vanover as well, eventually, right? So like, I don't think it's not going to be on Jameel Lyons. But what is your scorching hot take, John?
That by this time next year, we're talking about a denied Dennis Sutton is the best like Penn State defensive end in ages, like in a long time.
I believe it.
Potentially, sure. like there is best defensive end to ever play at Penn State upside denied Dennis Sutton. He is genuinely unbelievable size, speed, strength, athleticism, length, like all of it.
I don't know if it was like when he enrolled or committed, he had like tweeted about the sack record.
Yeah, I think it was Etor Smontos doing. Like he was on a sack streak, something like that. Maybe I don't remember what it was, but Denai like tweeted about that. And like, I don't know if that's on the table because that's hard to do and he's not going to get enough reps in all likelihood because they rotate those guys. But yeah, I think we're going to be talking about like a game wrecker, top 5 to 10 draft pick. You know, a guy that is just obliterating dudes left and right. And that's why when I say like, I don't know that there's going to be a step back next year, right? Like, I think he's probably going to be the best of the group, and that means Jameel Lyons has to do a little bit less than these other guys. Frankly, might not even start. Like, I don't want to pencil him in or anything like that because you mentioned Fisher and Vanover. Both of them are very good. But, yeah, this is the pass rush is incredible. The secondary is really good. Daquan Hardy was awesome again, I thought.
Kalen King, to me, interesting, right?
Yes.
Because – ever since the Ohio State game, Marvin Harrison, I think Kalen King's stock is starting to fall a little bit in the NFL draft, right? I think you look at it, right? Penn State has the weird streak where they haven't had a corner selected in the first round. And of course, 2 years ago, we were all like, oh, Joey Porter's going to snap it. Then he goes 32nd overall. So technically, no.
32nd overall when there were 31 firsts last year's draft. Usually that is a first round.
So you have the weird technicality there. And then this year it was like, oh, Kalen King for sure. I'm really curious just kind of how NFL scouts see him, how they view him. I do wonder about that because we did see early on there were some completions. But I don't find it to be alarming. But I do Neither think, do I. like, and it's it, I get it. It's different with corners. I just feel like you kind of wait for those game-changing moments with a Kalen King, right? Like a pick, one of those big pass breakups. Now, some of that is that you're not getting targeted a ton, sure. But I just feel like at some point, I don't know, maybe we still will see it down the stretch. But, yeah, that was my one quibble there.
I I am not concerned nearly as much as I think other people are. I think a lot of it is what you mentioned about him not being targeted as much. So when it does go wrong, it feels like catastrophic because it's a smaller sample size. When you get five opportunities thrown your way and you mess up one of them, like, it feels like a lot more, right? As to when you get last year, he was being targeted a bunch because of Joey Porter and he was seemingly stopping everything. And so when he did make a mistake, it was like 2 of 12 or 2 of 10 rather than 1 of 5. And it's the same percentage, but it feels different. From talking to some people in the NFL, I don't think there's any real concerns with how he's played so far, right? Like with some talking to people who have done some scouting for NFL teams and work for teams, like I would guess. And again, these things change rapidly, right? Yeah. We are 6 months away, 7 months away almost from the NFL draft. He very well could fall to the third round for whatever reason. But as things stand, I still think he's going to be a first round pick. I still think from what I gather, that is generally the feeling too, that he's a first round level talent. It remains to be seen if that will come to fruition. Again, you just don't know with how these things go. The draft is a crapshoot. Guys fall all the time. But as of now, I still feel good about Kalen King, the player, the draft prospect. Like I understand people being worried and that's totally fine because it does feel catastrophic at times, but I do think he has been really good this year. I just think it's more noticeable when he isn't. And I said this again after Ohio State, like the Marvin Harrison thing, like Patrick Surtain the second is probably the best corner in the NFL right now. Marvin Harrison Jr. would get him on occasion right now, right? Like he is just that level of talent. It is what it is. Like guys, I mean, in the NFL at the highest
Marvin Harrison Jr. would look really good in green and gold next year. I'm just saying, John.
I would say the same about Midnight Green, but I don't think I have to worry about us picking
Definitely not. You will not have a shot at that. I will say, though, there were a lot of scouts here today, really big contingent, which is probably, I don't know, some of it probably has to do with the ease of getting in and out of Maryland, right? Like, and what I like to do is I like to watch the scouts watch whoever they're watching, right? That's like the Bengals were watching Olu a couple of weeks ago, like all in on him. And so I like to kind of do that, but I do, I will say another thought I had today, someone who I think is making himself a lot of money this year, John, since that seems to be a theme on this podcast, people making money, we're all for it.
Team cash them checks, baby.
Yes. Tyler Warren.
Yes.
I think he's someone who I've called a starting level tight end.
I think he's more than that. Like you know, I don't say this often. Uh-oh. I think I was wrong.
Wait, I didn't hear you, Johnny. You're breaking up.
I'm not saying it a second time. But no, he has been, and it's the blocking is obviously important at the next level. James talks about that all the time, that these Penn State tight ends, and they go and they can usually block at the next level. Frankly, Brenton Strange probably got picked higher than I thought he would because of that in the second round. Yeah. I think Tyler Warren has that chance. Theo Johnson absolutely has that chance. Theo Johnson was one of Matt Miller's top five tight ends in the class when I checked his prospect rankings. I just think like he is better as a receiver than I probably have given him credit for. He's not necessarily separating, but it is. I hate doing this because it feels like I'm comparing him to these guys. Like I'm not saying that he is, you know, Dallas Goedert or whatever.
Oh no, I knew that's where you were going to go with this.
But like when a guy, it's Goddard excels at this, and this is why he comes to front of mind with this, because Warren is obviously not nearly as good at it. But it's where he presents himself as such a big target that he is open when it may not appear that he is. So he doesn't necessarily require the same level of separation. This, by the way, goes back to what we were talking about with Drew trusting guys. Like this came into play today for sure. But I just think like Warren is kind of open when he may not appear to be open. And I think that matters. Again, he's not Dallas Goedert. That's unfair to him to set those expectations.
Actually, we're going to clip that. I want that to go viral.
I'm sure that that's what will happen here. This is why I don't like doing comparisons, generally speaking, because they're difficult and people automatically think that you're saying that this is what the career will look like. But that type of ability is something that you see a lot in a guy like that. And I think that is probably something that's harder to value. And if I think that's probably what I missed when I was watching him, right? Like this idea, because again, being good at that, it requires trust. Like the quarterback just has to trust you. And so I think maybe I missed it because it didn't seem like there was that level of trust between quarterback and tight end at that point.
You know what I'm thinking, John? We talk about all these crazy things, these wrinkles. Tyler Warren was a quarterback. Maybe he's going to get to throw a pass soon, too.
We've seen it before.
I mean, yeah, you're right.
Please don't. Please, I'm begging.
I'm planting some seeds. Daquan Hardy did not get a play on offense today. I wanted to make sure that
I asked him about this.
Oh, did you?
I don't think I ever told you.
How did it go?
It was just Daquan and I. It started with him complimenting my hoodie, which seems to be a common theme in the
Penn State. Why would he even like your hoodie? He's from Pittsburgh.
It's a great hoodie. I don't know. It's a nice Sixers hoodie.
Maybe he just likes Washington. Maybe he just likes the Sixers.
It's a good hoodie. But he said, I asked him about it. I was like, it was a bit tongue in cheek because it was just him and I talking. And he like smiled.
Did you throw me under the bus? Did you say
I should have. I should have done that.
Missed opportunity.
I really did miss an opportunity with that. But he just said, like, maybe like jokingly he's mentioned it, but never like really. And I was like, well, maybe. Like, he just laughed. But no, I think like those kind of wrinkles make sense to me. Getting the ball in those guys' hands makes sense to me. Stop having non-quarterbacks throw the ball. Stop it. Everybody at every level, stop it. Unless it's the Philly special, in which case do it every time and all the time. In very limited situations, is this okay? Stop having receivers throw the ball far downfield. Please, I'm begging. All of those plays, just take out whoever's a receiver and put Bo Prabula in. He's a great athlete too, and he's better at throwing.
We're going to show up to practice Wednesday, and probably just to troll us, James is going to have like every skill position player throwing passes.
That's right. You know. And he's just going to point at me the entire time. Mm-hmm. That's it. Just pointing over at the sideline as they nail every single one.
I will say there was an interesting moment after the game. Prabula went over, presumably, I'm thinking, hoping it was his family. Otherwise, it's really awkward moment with strangers and like hugged them. I thought maybe it was like a girlfriend or a sister or someone. Again, I just probably made that awkward, but he hugged them. And
I am not going to comment on any of that.
There was very much like an emotional moment, right? Where it's like, clearly to us, it's been okay. You're going to get him on the field, whatever. But like he went over and like almost looked like he was going to collapse into, yeah, again, presumably family members' arms, because that's what this game has meant for him, right? Watch, it's going to be like some random fan.
I know, I can't get over you saying this.
I have video.
It's not going to be cut from the podcast either, so everyone will hear this, and I just think it's very funny. And again, it's not something that I'm getting anywhere near.
I'm thinking it's his family, Joe. Nope. Like that's.
I hope so.
I'll show you the video because it also is a really special moment with fans. I don't know.
Yeah, some random people at the end, a very special moment with, but, which actually, like, I think is the funnier outcome.
Oh yeah, no, I'm probably gonna get a DM from some random fan. Like, yes, that was me.
That was me.
God, but like to me, I thought that was a telling moment. Regardless of whoever he was with, that like this was a release for him, and this was an important night for him. And we didn't get a chance to talk to him afterwards, so maybe we'll talk to him this week, because I do have plenty of questions, as we know, about the Bo Prabula package. But somebody else I wanted to spotlight, because I don't feel like we've been talking about him enough this season, and I think some of that has certainly been warranted because he kind of hasn't been playing as we thought. But then tonight, I thought this was Abdul Carter's best game.
Am I wrong, John? No, we've talked about him negatively, or at least I have.
That's what, yeah.
Because
I was trying to transition, I've dug myself in a deep enough hole already.
5 out of 10. I'm just going to pretend everything that happened for the last 3 minutes didn't happen. But no, I thought this was Abdul Carter's best night. We've talked about before, like the difficulty in balancing aggression and over-aggression. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, you want to toe the line of being aggressive in the right moments. Right. So you're not overplaying things. You're not missing tackles because of it. He kind of struck the balance tonight. And I thought he was on point in the run game. I thought he's on point in the passing game. It was funny. There was a blitz in one of the A gaps, which is the gap between the center and the guard, that he mistimed. Like, he jumped it a little and had to step back. And then he obviously blitzed anyways. And he still beat the lineman. Like, he still blew past him. I was like, oh no, like they're in for it today. But no, I thought Carter was great. I thought the linebackers in general were great. Dom DeLuca, really good at game out there. Tony Rojas, when he was out there, was awesome. Clearly, like, I think star potential there for Penn State.
Oh, yeah.
Curtis Jacobs was really good. But yeah, I mean, what more can you say, right? This defense, we've talked about it before. I still think it's one of the best in the country. I've called it the best before. If you want to quibble with that, that's fine. But I think it's clearly one of the 3 to 5 best in the country.
And it's Ohio really State fans. Anywhere. That's who you've been quibbling with.
That's probably true. But no, I think it's one of the best, and there's no reason to believe that that's not true at this point. And it's going to lead into this potential rock fight next week with Michigan, and maybe Penn State hits those shot plays. Maybe they don't. We will, of course, have everything that you need about that this week. Maybe I'm earlier than usual.
I'm checking the film on the videos that I took to see who these people are.
But we will have everything you need. James Franklin will speak Monday. We will figure out how that will impact our podcasting schedule. We've obviously been recording on Tuesdays, releasing on Wednesdays for you guys, but we will make adjustments as we need to, potentially stay the same day, potentially shift. We will see. But I think that is a great place to leave it tonight.
We've done enough damage here.
you French now? It ain't me. A 51-50 51-15, excuse me, victory for Penn State. A pretty massive win, all things considered, setting up for what should be a really fun week, and one that I think Penn State fans have reason to have hope for. So with that being said, that'll do it for this episode of the Nittany Dispatch. As always, find Audrey on Twitter at oddsnyder4. Find her at The Athletic, where her writing is. Find me at John Sauber on Twitter. No H in John, notably. Find my writing
at tennerdaily.com. Maybe it's not a family member. I don't know.
Oh, no. This podcast needs to end. That'll do it for this episode of the Nittany Dispatch. Have a great day.